Welcome to the 12 Songs of Christmas, today with Los Straitjackets and the band's Christmas Must Be Tonight. My name is Alex Rawls, and the Christmas season finally caught up with me. If you listened to last week's show, I probably seemed a little subdued at the start. That was because I had to record last week's introduction at 4:30 in the morning and was doing so in a way to try not to wake up house guests who were a little bit unexpected but showed up for the end of the holidays. And those guests also ended up consuming yesterday and much of today. So, unfortunately, this week's show is a day late. I'm hoping that next week we'll start to get back on a regular schedule and I'll be back out on my usual Wednesday. Thank you in advance for your patience. Today, I think we got a show that I hope will be worth the wait. I spoke last fall to Los Straitjackets, Eddie Angel of Los Straitjackets, guitar player. Surf and instrumental rock band Los Straitjackets have released three albums of Christmas music. In 2002, Tis the Season for Los Straitjackets. 2009, Yuletide Beat. And then this Christmas season passed, Los Straitjackets' Complete Christmas Songbook, which collected both those albums and a handful of loose tracks that they had scattered out in the years since 2002. Anyway, it was a good talk with guitarist Eddie Angel. And so let's get straight to that. So when Los Straitjackets started, did you ever see Christmas music in its future?
No, I didn't think so. No, as a matter of fact, when we started, I didn't see anything in our future. I just thought we were going to be doing it for fun. You know, we started in Nashville, and I just figured, well, you know, once a month will play out for our friends. I never thought it was going to take off, and, you know, I was surprised, you know, at the whole thing. I guess it was a good timing, I guess, on our part, because Pulp Fiction had just come out, and all of a sudden there was surf instrumental bands everywhere, every city in America. So we kind of caught that wave, you know. But I'm just pleasantly surprised that I'm still doing it.
That's great.
Yeah.
So where did the idea for Tis the Season come from?
I really can't recall. I mean, I don't know why we thought about doing that. I guess we're just always kind of brainstorming ideas, you know. Just thought, well, why not? I mean, but we thought it would be a fun thing to do. That's all we ever. That's sort of what our agenda always is. We don't have to answer to anybody, you know. We don't have to answer to record labels or something like that. So we're free. We're given free hand to do whatever we want. But I can't really recall why, you know, why we did it. But I've always been a fan of Christmas music. You know, I think it's because growing up I was the youngest of five kids, you know. And I think my older siblings would always make, I was the youngest by like 8 years. So I think they always made it like a magical time for me, you know? And so that's what it was. I mean, I thought Christmas was like my favorite time of year. And I just always remember when Christmas music, when I was growing up, you wouldn't really hear Christmas music till like, seemed like a week or two before Christmas, you know? But it just made it so special, you know. That's when you heard those songs.
Yeah,
but, yeah, I'm a fan. You know.
Okay, actually, there's a interview I hope to do because I've talked in the past to radio programmers, and about kind of the transition that some stations go to all Christmas music, and it really it's been now enough of a thing that people assume it's been that way. But it really, as you say, that for a long time. It might be all Christmas, maybe the week before Christmas, and that kind of in December, they started gradually putting more and more Christmas songs into the rotation. But that the All Christmas Station is actually a fairly new phenomenon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now Christmas, that's starting earlier and earlier, it seems. Yeah.
So, what Christmas songs do you remember from your from your family or from growing up as a kid?
Well, White Christmas, Christmas Song, you know, Come Santa Claus, or how about All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth, you know, songs like that. Chipmunks, Christmas right. Song, I always dug that. And that's what I remember, Rudolph by Gene Autry. I still think that's a great sounding record. And then later on, of course, I got hip to like Phil Spector, Christmas record, and Beach Boys. Elvis Christmas record was a big thing in my house. My sisters were Elvis fans. Brenda Lee. And then later on, my wife, from her childhood, it was Jack Jones' Christmas album, which is a good one. And now I really dig the Ella Fitzgerald Christmas album. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great album.
So, yeah.
Were you familiar with the Ventures Christmas album in its time, or is that something you learned about later?
Yeah, I think I learned about that later. Yeah, much later. I was a big Ventures fan as a kid. I mean, the first song I learned was Walk Don't Run, and I had the album, learned to play guitar with the Ventures, but somehow the Christmas records escaped me. But I remember the first time I heard a friend of mine play, he was playing live, he did Sleigh Ride, the Ventures version of Sleigh Ride, and man, blew me away. I thought it was great, you know. That we recorded our version of Sleigh Ride at Mike Campbell's house. Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
How did that happen? That
and, well, on one of our very first tours, about 95 or so, I think, we're doing everything, you know, in stores and stuff. We did this. We had a gig in Atlanta, and in the afternoon we had an in-store at a record store in a suburban mall. And it was pretty grim, man. I mean, we had to load our stuff through. You can imagine this big, huge mall. And in the middle of the afternoon, nobody was there. So a couple of kids looking at rap records. But there was one guy there digging it, paying attention. And when we were finished, he said, man, my name's Pete Droege, and I'm on tour with Tom Petty and Heartbreakers. We're in town tonight. This is great. I think I'm going to bring the band down to see you guys tonight. So he did. We were playing at a little club called the Star Bar in Atlanta, and he brought the whole band down, you know, except for Tom Petty. But Mike totally dug us, man, because I think his first bands was an instrumental band, you know. So he dug us big time. And on that tour, we were going to be going through L.A., and so when we got here, you know, he came out to see us at our show. Anyway, we became friends, you know. And right around that time, maybe not that trip, but maybe a year later, he invited us out to, he's got a studio in his house, and we recorded Sleigh Ride and Marshmallow World. And that was a 45 on my label called Spin Out Records. And then we recorded a couple songs with Big Sandy. I don't know if you're familiar with Big Sandy.
Yeah.
Doing a couple songs in Spanish. So, and still friends with Mike. In fact, I just emailed him yesterday, let him know we're in town, but he's on tour now with Fleetwood Mac, so they were starting a new tour. But he's a great guy, man, and this big fan of instrumental music. I mean, he put his own instrumental record out called The Blue Stingrays. But anyway,
yeah,
that's how that came about, yeah.
So,
and we did Marshmallow World as a flip side, because that I heard that on the Brenda Lee album, Marshmallow World. That's kind of a rare Christmas song. You don't hear too much.
So let's go to music for a moment, and then we'll come back and talk some more. That from the first Lost Straitjackets Christmas album, Tis the Season for Lost Straitjackets, this is Feliz Navidad. What's the story behind that version, and that arrangement?
Well, we're marrying Feliz Navidad to La Bamba by Richie Valens. So, because I mean, it's because they're, you know, both kind of have a Hispanic connection, right? So yeah, that's I mean, the beginning is that's the beginning of a La Bamba, or yeah,
sure,
yeah, and then. And the rest of it, we just kind of, you know, that's a song I did too, man, Jose Feliciano.
Right.
It was really cool, man. But it's funny, I had a friend in Spain, and he hated that record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he hated it, yeah. But he said that. But anyway, but I always liked it. And I used to do it when singing it, you know. But anyway, so, yeah, and then we just did it like we thought. Whenever we do stuff, I mean, I guess we're always kind of thinking, you know, what would the Ventures do? What would Duane Eddy do? You know, stuff like that. Or Booker T and the MGs, or, you know. And but anyway, yeah, that's just, we were thinking we would do it like La Bamba, you know.
Sure. Now, and there are a number of songs on, certainly on the first album, where, and actually, and also I think on Yuletide Beat as well, where there's a number of times where you do similarly kind of reference one song on your way to a Christmas song. Was that just kind of the way you work, or is that, or is that part of the kind of the idea of just kind of the idea of how y'all wanted to do Christmas songs for these records?
Well, I guess it was just, we're just trying to come up with a good arrangement. You know, there was no, I don't remember there being any thought behind it, except each one, each song as we did it, you know, it just tried to, you know, come up with the best arrangement. But I think on some of the songs we would try to reference some of our own songs, you know, because that's what the Ventures would do. You know, they do Sleigh Ride, but they put the intro of Walk Don't Run in it, for instance, you know. So, but we did one, some Christmas song, I forget what it was, but we put one of our songs called Car Hop in the middle of it. I mean, things like that, you know. And, you know, it was really fun for us, because all we had to do is come up with cool arrangement ideas. The songs were already there, you know. So usually when you make a record, the hardest part is coming up with a good song, you know. And but with the Christmas songs, I mean, you know, the song was already there. So it's just, we just had to come up with an arrangement, and it was fun, you know, like, see what we could come up with, you know.
Yeah, I would imagine that in this case, part of the challenge has to be to figure out how to make a Christmas song your Christmas song, or how to make a version that's distinctive to you.
Yeah, right. And that's what we always try to do. You know, we always, no matter what we do, we try to make it sound like this is something, this is Lost Straitjackets. I mean, we're not going to try to sound like, you know, somebody else. You know, we're not going to try to sound, you know, like a Jose Feliciano or something. But that's important. I mean, our manager Jake Gramek was really instrumental in that. He would always tell us, "Not, you know, just do it like, you know, like you guys would do it. No, don't try to be something you're not, you know." And it's good advice, you know.
Sure.
So we always kept it, you know, we just kept it as a four-piece guitar instrumental band. And sometimes, you know, the limitations that you have, it makes you have to be creative, you know, and come up with it. You have to do something that keep people's attention, keep, you know, make it. So it would seem like a something that would seem like a limitation, like two, you know, a four-piece, you know, instrumental band. It can work to your advantage if you're clever enough about it, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I guess I was thinking about when I was listening to it is, and particularly the idea that, you know, songs in some way refer to other songs, that kind of almost mashup quality is kind of like, how do you make a Christmas song in the 2000s? Which is kind of the same question as how do you make a surf song in the 2000s? How do you make it like you sort of acknowledge that the world existed before this, and there's the world has a whole lot of these songs already in it, and that you're not, you know, you're not discovering the new world. Is that a part of how you think about it at all? That the idea of how do I make this make sense now?
Well, I know what you're saying. It is. I mean, you always kind of wonder if what you're doing is really even worthwhile. I mean, but you just kind of do your thing, you know, and maybe somebody's going to like it. But we just like to think of ourselves as a simple thing, just a rock and roll combo, like there's like a jazz combo would be, you know, it's just, and kind of just, you know, we're not like super duper, you know, guitar pickers, you know, but we have good, I think we have good musical instincts, and we're more, like all of us really are more like songwriters than hotshot guitar players, you know. So I think that helps. That's why I think we can arrange these songs in a cool way. But yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's,
sure. When you're approaching Christmas songs, well, when you're approaching, like, you know, Feliz Navidad, what did you think needed to happen? What did you need to bring, or what needed to happen to make that song work for you?
I'm trying to remember. We're never thinking of like what's hot licks, things like that. That's
sure.
A Christmas song, you know. Just pretty much want to put the melody across. But we want to put the melody across with, but then the arrangement can be something that's unique. Like I said, you know, like doing a Christmas song like La Bamba, you know, using La Bamba as a backdrop.
All right, well, let's go back for more music here. Let's go back. This is from Yuletide Beat. This is Close to Christmas, The First Noel. I kind of hadn't planned that when I was picking out the songs to play today, but of course, and that's one that is not limited to a four piece, obviously with the organ in there as well.
Well, the first thing I can tell you about that song is that we use the intro to one of our songs called Pacifica.
Okay.
So again, that's just kind of what you do. You kind of cannibalize other songs for arrangement ideas, you know, and then I sound like the guitar was a 12 string. You gotta realize, I mean, I haven't listened to these songs in a long time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but I'm listening to them kind of new. but that's a 12 string. So that's something we would do just to kind of add variety. Yeah, and the keyboard. I mean, that was probably, I think that's probably one of us playing the keyboard, but I don't remember 100%. But yeah.
Did you have to decide what was the right mood for a song? Because that's clearly, obviously, a very different mood and a different level of aggression from Feliz Navidad, and it's in a very different energy from many songs on the two records. So, you know, how do you decide? You know, did you have a thought as to like this needs to be, you know, a soft song? This needs to be a this. How did that play out?
No, I think we just would try different things, you know, and sometimes maybe we would do just the opposite, you know. I forget. I think we did Silent Night on something. I can't remember. I think we did it like Rock Out. Sit around and brainstorm, and you know, just see what, everybody would just come up with different ideas, and we would try something, and if it worked, we went with it. We weren't thinking this should be soft or this should be this or that, you know.
Sure.
It's more trial and error, but I'd be curious if we did Silent Night. Is that on there?
Yeah, I think there is Silent Night Rock, if memory serves.
Yeah, I think what we did with that, if my memory serves me, is that we used the Beatles version of Ain't She Sweet, which that's going back, but they recorded it in Hamburg, Germany, 1961. It's nothing that was on a Beatles record, you know, but we were familiar with it. And I think that's what we did with that one. So we do things like that, you know?
Sure.
And just kind of think, what song would this, what song can we, I'm trying to think what the word is, what we were doing. I mean, I'm using the word cannibalized, but it might be some other word, like transplant, or, we'd use another song as a guide, you know?
Sure.
Or, yeah. I'm just saying, it was all over the map, what we would do, you know, like one of those songs, I think, Charlie Old St. Nick, we were trying to sound like 70s British rock or something, like Mata Hoople or something, you know?
Right.
And another song we might try to sound like Booker T and the MGs. Another song might be, you know, the Beatles. I mean, so in that regard, it was sort of a lot of fun, you know? I mean, no one was, you know, it's a Christmas record. No one, you know, is going to think badly of you.
Right.
For doing something. Yeah.
So has Christmas music become part of your band identity now?
I don't know. I can't answer that. But I think I hear a lot of people say that that's one of their favorite Christmas records. Like they, you know, every year they get it out. But I don't know. I don't know if that's how across the board that is. But you know, for years we did Christmas tours that were pretty cool, man. And we do it with the world famous Pontani Sisters dancing. And our friend named Kaiser George from Scotland. And to me, it was like some of the most entertaining shows. I don't know, I can't. Kaiser George would be up there in a sweater and a pipe, looking like Mr. Rogers at the end of the night. The next thing I know, he'd be swinging from the rafters, you know, like a he's a nut, man. And the Pontani Sisters, I don't know if you're familiar with the world famous Pontani Sisters.
Yeah.
They're burlesque dancers, and it was really funny. They'd always have great outfits. And I don't know how that never kind of took off, because the show was entertaining. But now we've done a few with Nick, you know. That's what we first started doing with Nick Lowe. That's how we originally came together. We did a couple of Christmas tours. but that's now morphed into where we're just touring with him. Other, you know, other times of the year as a backup band now, you know.
Oh, that's great.
That's what we're doing right now. We're on, before I toured with Nick Lowe. We were just on Conan O'Brien on Monday. I don't know if you were aware of that, but you can find that online somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you doing a Christmas tour with Nick again this year?
No, there's no plans of doing that. You know.
Okay.
I think Nick is, I don't think he's, it's Christmas, I think he was very hesitant to do a Christmas record. He probably thought it was a pretty square thing to do. And I think he had, I don't know, I can't speak for him, but I think a couple of those tours were enough for him.
Okay.
Personal items of luggage with them at all times. Any unattended luggage in the terminal building will be removed by the security services and may be destroyed.
Outside the taxi window, on the way to catch my flight, I noticed snowflakes playing in the ever-failing light when he dropped me at departure. It was really coming down, deep and crisp and even. It settled on the ground. It looks like Christmas at the airport. All the planes are grounded.
Has Christmas music been good business for you?
It's been okay. I mean, I don't know the same thing. We haven't had, like, I mean, when you say good business venture, I mean, well, we tour a lot, but the way you make, like, the real windfall money in this business is if a song is used in a movie or TV show, you know?
Right.
And I think there was a song, a Christmas song that was used in last year, but I can't remember what it was, but it was no big shakes. So I would have to say the short answer to that is no. I mean, it's just been one of many things we've done, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in an interview in 2008, that I saw that fellow straitjacket, Daddy-O Grande, said that he rarely exchanges Christmas presents anymore. And I wonder how Christmas actually fits into your life.
Well, for me, I've got three kids, so it's sort of a big deal, you know, having kids and the time to go visit family. You know, I live in Nashville, but my family, me and my wife's family are all up in the Northeast in Virginia. So we try to get together with family. So it's like, I think my favorite time of year personally. And it's a great time of year. I mean, everybody's kind of festive and you get together with people and yeah, but I don't know why Daddy-O said that, but I didn't read that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how does it fit in? How does Christmas fit into your life as a touring musician?
Well, sometimes I don't get home until like a couple of days before Christmas, but some years that's been the case. But sometimes there's a lot of touring right before it. And one Christmas, and I was in Japan. I spent Christmas and New Year's in Japan. That was pretty weird. But that was before I had kids, so that would never happen now.
Right. Well, I think we're in a good place. Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Alex.
All right.
I'm going to disappear, ladies and gentlemen, but don't go away. Leave you in the capable hands of Law Straitjackets.
Since Robbie Robertson is not going to talk to me about the band's Christmas Must Be Tonight, I had a conversation about the song with good friend and songwriter Jim McCormick. Since this conversation took place, Continental Drifter and DB Peter Holzapple recorded a solo version of the song, so at some point in the near future, I'll talk to him about it, But here's my talk with Jim McCormick. You today brought in a song that I have loved for a very long time, and I never think about when I think about Christmas music. And we'll talk about why. It is Christmas Must Be Tonight by The Band.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I mean, a beautiful song, like many of The Band songs. Beautiful, beautiful melody. And it's just, it's one of the, it's a beautiful, when I say it's a beautiful melody, it's not just pretty, it's haunting. It gets underneath my skin and stays with me. And I remember where I was exactly the first time I heard it. I was performing at a songwriter's night, maybe an old Caffeine songwriter's night at Carrollton Station, and Tom Maron, it was Christmas season, and Tom Maron was playing, and he went into that song and played that song, and I about fell off my chair. And it was just, it was amazing. And he introduced it as a band song, and it just floored me. It floored me hearing a guy, one voice, one guitar, singing this melody.
All right. Well, let's hear it, and then we'll talk about it some more. This is Christmas Must Be Tonight by The Band.
Come down to the manger, see the little stranger wrapped in swaddling, Lord, the Prince of Peace. The wheels start turning, torches start burning, and behold, wise men journey from the east. Our little baby boy, bring the people so much joy. Son of a carpenter, Mary carried the light. This must be Christmas, must be tonight. A shepherd on the hillside, where over my flock I abide. On a cold winter night, a band of angels.
Slow fading that so we can hear Rick Danko singing the that section there. So,
from the album Islands by The Band.
Yes, good call. The what about it? What about that performance?
You know, I mean, is it Danko singing? Manuel?
Well, everybody sings.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, like it makes no difference. It's just got a melody that's so clear and simple and sounds like nothing you've ever heard before. And I think, you know, that just kills me. It's sung from the viewpoint of the shepherd. You know, we talked about once before about the viewpoint of Joseph, the viewpoint of a teenage girl having a baby. I guess Little Drummer Boy is that viewpoint as well.
Right, right.
But, I just think it's a beautiful song. And for it to come from The Band, from real heroes of mine, made me love it even more. You know, it was their creation. They were putting it out there. It's like, you got to ride this. This is good stuff.
Yeah, you know, for me, it took me a while. The song itself is really immediate, and I was just thinking, The Band is one of those bands that there's a time when I just love the hell out of them, so much so I don't return to them very much.
Same here.
And the upside of that is I am periodically sort of blown away again.
Yeah.
By just sort of how magical at times their voices can be. And in that case, just hearing how completely plaintive Danko was. And, you know, if you can buy a shepherd who sounds like he's from Arkansas, everything else about that's completely credible. You believe that guy by himself on a hillside.
That's right.
Sitting under a tree looking at the sheep. It's like that guy is like, and like we're looking at the world, and like, this world is bigger than I know, and it's more complicated than I know, and just trying to process what's in front of him, as desperately as he can.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I love that. That's a great, great viewpoint. I want to just the chorus is so, it's the splashes of imagery too that I think gave the song power in my eyes that I just loved in the chorus. You know, that that "How'd a Little Baby Boy Bring the People So Much Joy," "Son of a Carpenter," "Mary Carried the Light," "This Must Be Christmas," "Must Be Tonight."
Yeah.
That's pretty, I mean, you know, each one of those is just a big left hook of a punch. Boom, 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 chorus over. You know, take that, you know.
See, I would actually go the other way on that. That idea that this must be Christmas, like this shit just snuck up on you. That's not necessarily, to me, you know, that's a function of, that's how good all the craft is, and that's how good the vocals are, how good that melody is.
Leading up to that.
That I'm with it, you have this basically, I'm just discovering what this is. I guess this night must be Christmas. Who knew?
Right.
I just thought it was another night. It's like, I like lyrically, I don't buy.
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe the rest, maybe he earns that last line in my eyes just because the previous ones are so strong.
Right. No, and I'm with you. And I'll tell you, the other thing I think is that, well, then it took me a while to get to with this, or not get to, but to think about this as a Christmas song, is because I typically, the world, you know, typically, so I sort of have in my mind, rock music is on one side and Christmas music is on the other.
Fair enough.
And to some extent, a whole lot of musicians feel the same way. It's been interesting talking with musicians over the years about Christmas music, and they're always a little bit, or they're often, and not always, I should be fair, they're often a little bit reluctant to have that the Christmas stuff seen as part of their body of work. It's sort of like the Christmas stuff is the thing they did a few years back that people seem to like during this time of year, but they don't play it the rest of the year. Like I talked to Robert Earl Keen, and that he gets requests all year long for Merry Christmas from the family, but he only plays it once he gets, you know, like after Thanksgiving. Special occasions.
You're making me think, I bet most of us are reluctant to even cite it as part of our major. You know, you want to ask a songwriter who your major influences are. You know, arguably, all of us go back to Christmas music. It's kind of some of the first music we all hear, but we're not identifying it as such, as the influence that it really probably is in our lives in becoming musicians or songwriters.
Yeah, I mean, that was what, when I heard Dylan's Christmas album, which is so polarizing. I love it. But the thing was, when I heard it, part of what I also heard was that it was part of the sort of the macro project of like the last 20 years of Dylan's career, where he was re-exploring basically fundamental American music, whether it was old folk songs, whether it's Sinatra, or whether it's, you know, Christmas music. Here is the body of music that has been the music everybody knew.
That's right.
This and going in and seeing what's in that music, what's left in that music. You know, I thought that was a really smart project, and that was really interesting. Yeah. But that's where, you know, as much as, you know, Dylan's version, Dylan's voice might be tough for you to process as Christmas, nonetheless, that was sort of an essential part of that idea, was this is our common music, and he wanted to explore it just like all our other common music.
Great point, yeah, great point.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it is, I think it's part of what fascinates me about this stuff is that, you know, it is the music that even if you're not sure how you feel about it, even if you, you know, you don't love it, or the stuff you've heard so many times that you're over it, that it still is music that's, it's in you somewhere.
It's the gateway drug for all of us in the very beginning, you know, No, and I think it's great. It should be acknowledged. Your point about the Dylan album and what he's really doing there with the Christmas songs, that's great.
Yeah, and thank you. So I think kind of as a relation, though, because the band, it's kind of a handy thing to think about, because the band didn't necessarily lead lives that you think of as being like you. This is not, you know, It's a Wonderful Life. They had some hard times. And nonetheless, to have all those pieces come together, and you know, I mean, in a sense, it's sort of beautiful to think about Richard Manuel as, you know, singing a Christmas song,
right?
Just sort of as a concept. I can't remember. I have to go back and listen to see if he's in there or where he is in there. But even just as a concept, he has such an insanely soulful voice. Yeah. He's the one. There are a handful of voices that I really miss.
Yeah.
And like I always always miss Carl Wilson of the Beach Boys. I mm-hmm. think that he had just an astoundingly beautiful voice. And I always thought Manuel did something that so many people don't do for me. And I always found his voice touching and emotional.
Yeah, no, the whole band. And, you know, making me think about my love was so strong and passionate for them for a long time. I'm curious why you may think we jump off of the band at some point in our lives. For me, it was probably about 29 years old. Maybe that's a topic for another episode. But why do we have the great love affair with the band and then we don't come back to her ever again kind of thing?
Well, actually, I mean, I do think I've got feeling. This is a quick one. So I think there comes a point where you've mined the mine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same way that for a whole lot of people, that Graham Parsons was sort of their introduction to sort of country rock and their way sort of from rock back toward country. But there comes a point where you have learned what Graham has to tell you.
Yep, I got the same relationship there.
And so, but the nice thing is, I have to say, is like, an occasion like this, you pull this out, and I'm like, yeah, I got to go back and listen to some more band again. Yeah. So that itself is kind of like a Christmas present.
You never know what's in your stocking, babe.
I know that's for true. So, well, Jim, thanks for coming over. This
My
has been
pleasure.
Great.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, talk to you later. Thanks to Eddie Angel of Los Straitjackets and Jim McCormick for the time and the talk. You can find them and 12 Songs of Christmas on Facebook. Drop by, and turn me on to your favorite Christmas songs and tell me who I should talk to. Christmas is past, but this show will continue throughout the year. Our theme song is Dawn of the Cosmos by Ask Again, and I'll finish with another from Los Straitjackets. From their Complete Christmas Songbook, this is their version of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Talk to you next week.